Tonight on Ham Nation, the International Space Station gets a new repeater. White Car shows us their hambulance. And George gives us some tales from the transmitter site. Stay tuned. Ham Nation's next.
Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 470, September 9th, 2020. Repeaters in the sky.
Hi, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID, and we're here to talk about ham radio and a lot of other things, things that are exciting, things that are educational. Most of the time, we just have fun, and I'm glad you're here. We have some really important guests tonight from the York County Amateur Radio Club. We're going to be getting into their slideshows and let you know what they're doing. But most of all, we have Gordon West. Gordo, how you doing?
We're fine, but we're really in heavy smoke down here in Southern California. We had some offshore breezes come through, and all of the fires up in the mountains are funneling right through Orange County. We look at the sun, and you can just barely see it as an orange dot. Wow. Well, we're going to head for space in a few minutes, so everybody put on your helmets and get ready for space travel, Bob.
Okay, that'll be fun. That'll be fun. And George is with us. George, how are you going? I don't guess any of those fires are affecting you in Mississippi, but how you doing? Okay?
Yeah, no problems with fire here right now. Yeah, doing okay. I spent the day at a transmitter site, and I brought back just a little snippet of video on something that looked interesting to me, and we'll have just a brief tales from the transmitter site tonight.
That's what we want to see. Yep, I got a couple little things I'm going to do in a couple minutes, actually, in the smoke and solder. You guys, gals, don't want to miss that. It's very important. For years, I have fought this with one of my Collins receivers, and I never could figure out what's going on until I said, okay, I'm going to fix this. And the fix was very simple, but oh, boy. Oh, boy. Don is here. He's over getting something together for Newsline. And Amanda is here. You never know what Amanda's going to come up with, but I'll tell you one thing. She's watching you. She's in the chat room. And please get some good questions for her. And we're all here, so let us know what's going to be the answer of your question. And I appreciate you being there, chat room. But I want you to pay attention to some really cool stuff from the York County Club. I'm going to bring John on. John, how are you doing? Thanks for being here tonight in the spotlight of amateur radio on Ham Nation.
Well, thanks, Bob, for having us here tonight. And hello to everybody there. And we're excited to be here. It's a privilege and an honor.
Well, we're always happy to have the clubs on, and all of you watching. If you can, just send me an email, and we'll spotlight your club. We're trying to share ideas. Each one of you, each week here, we find you all have different ideas, and it's really helped some of them because they say, "Wow, we could do that." And here we go again tonight with the York County Club. We're really happy about this. Let's go through these and tell us what we're seeing, John.
Well, that's our radio room, and before COVID, every first Thursday of the month we have fun night, operating night. So we'll bring in all of club members and guests, and we'll go in and operate in our radio room. And it's an opportunity for people who have not been on HF, some technicians or some new generals, to get them comfortable on the mic or the key, or we're learning digital modes. And we have 5 operating positions there in the clubhouse, so it's a lot of fun. We've got some really good experienced amateurs that will do some Elmering and help a lot of the new guys get on the air. We actually had a night where we brought in QRP rigs and ran QRP for a night on the antennas, and we worked Australia on 15 watts over the North Pole.
Oh, that's great. What a great idea.
And that's our service group. That's several of our club members, K6FNV and KN4VVS and Alpha Bravo 1 Charlie Delta, Whiskey Delta 2 Delta Whiskey, and KX4UV. They were working at a Christmas parade in Concord, North Carolina. One of the clubs up there asked us for some help to man the parade route. So they all went up and helped. And that's Tim's wife there in the middle in the black jacket.
Oh, that's great.
And that's an oldie but a goodie. This is before my time in amateur radio. This is the club back, I think this is either the early 90s or maybe the mid 90s, but they were doing a field day operation, and they were setting up an antenna. It was a 40 meter beam on a towable mast. So we have a lot of history in our club. Our club was founded in 1948, and we have been in operation since then. We're one of the oldest operating clubs in South Carolina.
Wow, that's great.
And this one's really special. This gentleman here in the plaid shirt is WB4QNI. His name's Steve Kelly. He's been a ham for, I think, 50 years, and he's been a member of the club for over 40 years. And that he is so proud of that. It is a go box he built. And he actually just recently moved and couldn't take everything with him to the new house. So he donated that box for our public service group and our Aries group. So wonderful donation and a great box. That thing is amazing. Everything you could want in a 2-meter box.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, this is one of the fun nights again. We have several of the club members there. The gentleman who is sitting there with the POTA shirt on, that's W3SPC. That's Steve Jakowski. He does a lot of POTA activations, and he was teaching people to build antenna launchers for pneumatic antenna launchers. He's been a master of building those, so we've got several of the club members there, Ron Pryor, and let's see, Billy's in there, KG4GSC, and let's see, Linda Fox is in there, several other folks, but it's a great photo, and we had a lot of fun with those antenna launchers. And this is field day from 2 years ago. The gentleman there in the gray shirt, K4VSV, he's been a ham for over 50 years, Bill. He lives about a mile from me, and he's one of the best CW operators I know. The gentleman standing behind him, and forgive me, I don't remember his name, but he was a guest there and was observing what's going on. That was our CW station. And Bob Bacharach's the other gentleman there with the green striped shirt, with a WA4EMF, I believe. And just a great guy. And they were working the CW station for that particular part of the day on field day. So that is a picture of several of the club members, myself included. I'm there on the extreme left. That's Bill Moraine, who's the vice director for Roanoke division for the ARRL N2COP. Darcy Pox in the middle, K4DQP. Steve, again. And the gentleman on the end there with the white hat is KN4JYY, is his call. His name is Vic. And behind him and behind all of us is a 40-meter parasitic triangular array we built for the field day. And it's actually switchable. We actually built a 20-meter that's off to the side. You can't see it in the photograph. But that thing was a monster on 40 meters, and so was it on the 20 meter was as well. We had a really good field day, except for the thunderstorm that came in and kind of tore up the afternoon. But that's a story, I'll tell you. We had such a good day, but we had a surprise thunderstorm roll up, and we had a gust front come in. We had 70-mile-an-hour winds that kind of tore the place up for a bit.
Oh, that's great.
And this is earlier this year, pre-COVID. This is the winter field day setup. We set up with the 2 campers. Well, 1 camper, and that is actually Fort Mill EMS's trailer. They loaned it to us, and we had 2 operating positions. And we ran winter field day. We actually finished 2nd in our division in the country. We've got a pretty good contesting club. A lot of activity around contesting in the club. We've got several folks that really are avid for field day, winter field day, South Carolina QSO party, any excuse to get on the air, that's what we like to do.
That's what it's all about, is getting on the air. It's good deal.
And this is Field Day 2019. And in the very back of the van there, that's a TV production, mobile TV production studio. The gentleman in the back, his name's Ted, K4TLC. And he's part owner of the production group, and he loaned us his van for the day. And that's myself and Darcy, K4DQP, operating Field Day. We were the voice stations. Darcy was running, I believe, 40 meters, and I was running on 20 at that point in time.
Wow. Great. Nice to see all those Heil products.
Absolutely. And that's our current club vice president, Philip, KM4WLS. And we were doing a scouting merit badge class during Field Day, and he was out there teaching and handing out information about ham radio to all the scouts that were out there. We had 275 scouts that were out at the club the same out at the park the same day we were out doing Field Day, and we had a very strong response. We ran tech classes soon after this, and I think we had about 30-35 of the scouts come in and take the tech class with their parents.
That's wonderful.
And that's Tom, WA0POD, and he's working a satellite. That was Winter Field Day this year, and he had an amazing setup. I wish I had a picture of the setup in the back of his truck. He had several radios hooked up and all the tracking. I mean, it was like a second nature for him to get out there and do the satellite contact for us. This is a table we did for our Aries group. We just reformed that a couple of years ago. I'm actually the EC for the county, and we did this at a VOAD, which is the volunteer organizations active in disaster relief, and that's our local Red Cross chapter. They asked us to come since we support the Red Cross, the York County Baptist, and also our local EM and EOC. So they asked us to come out and educate people about ham radio, so we were more than glad to get out there and do it. And this is our last class pre-COVID, our last testing session pre-COVID. These six, seven gentlemen all passed their test. They were all brand new technicians. And the gentleman in the center in the striped shirt, he's holding a brand new radio. With our testing sessions, if you pass your tech, we give you a ticket. And if you are lucky, you'll get drawn for a radio. It's not a very expensive radio, but it's a nice gift to walk out with your tech license and a radio. So we do that for all of our testing sessions. And we've actually resumed testing. We're doing some social distancing. We're limiting the number of people in the clubhouse and the number of VEs. We're only allowed to have four. So we have three kind of doing the grading and one going around and making sure that everybody has what they need. So we're restricting movement and require masks. And that's actually our meeting room, the clubhouse. The radio room that you saw the earlier picture is behind that glass there behind the door. We have a really nice facility built in 1994 by the club members. It's about 4,000 square feet. It's a really nice building.
John, I want to ask you a question about the clarifying. Tell me about that again. You give a radio to the class. How's that done? That's a great idea.
So we have several members who have donated some money to allow us to buy some 2 meter 440 handheld radios, and they're not a very expensive radio, and we buy them locally. There's a store here in town, buy two-way radios, and they give us a discount on the radios, so we go and buy the radios from them, and we give one at each testing session. So this last testing session we did back in August, we had two sessions because we limited the number of people, but we had such a demand for people to come in and test. We gave away two radios. So if you pass your tech exam, we give you a ticket. And when everybody who's taking the tech finishes their test, we have all the tests graded. We draw one of those tickets and they walk out with a radio.
Hey, what a great idea. That's terrific. And I applaud you for that. And
Thank you.
I guess, a meeting.
Yeah, that's actually, we were doing some we're replacing a rotor on one of the towers, and we had a meeting. And this is a meeting in the clubhouse. We were doing a presentation, and this is actually a pretty good night. We've got a good mix of folks. We've got some older gentlemen and ladies, and we've got some younger folks in the club now. And it's the lifeblood of the club, is to bring in the youth to help out support the club and kind of take leadership reins. And you know, some of the guys that have been in that room, that are in that room, have been past presidents and past officers, and kind of want to enjoy radio and not work so hard on the club any longer.
Man, this is great.
And this is our newest project. Back early in 2020, we were approached by Fort Mill EMS, who is the next town north of us, but still in the same county. They had this surplus ambulance, and they wanted to divest themselves of it. So we worked a deal, and they donated to us. And cool. It will become our new Aries mobile platform. We're going to begin work on that next week. Yeah, so we're really excited about this. We've got some really exciting plans. We're going to put at least one HF station in there, and probably two meter 440 stations. One will have DMR capabilities, because that interfaces well with our state of South Carolina emergency management division. We're going to have several antennas, computer setups. We've got some good connections with a group that can donate some computers. So we're real excited about this project. The next piece is Fort Mill EMS is coming to pick that back up. They're going to go ahead and pull the Fort Mill EMS decals on, put our decals on it, and we're going to call it the Hambulance.
That's great.
Hey, Gordo, what do we got to do to get our clubs to get old ambulances? Is that cool, Gordo, or what?
Oh, I think that's terrific. And John, your outreach to get kids as well as organizations to help sponsor all the hard work that your club members are putting in really shows with these still shots. So congratulations, John, for a great job to all the club members. And John, have you been conducting socially distanced meetings once a month, or have you gone to Zoom like some of the clubs have?
Well, we've actually have ceased in-person meetings, but we have embraced technology. And we kind of did this early on before COVID. We were pushing the club into the virtual territory. So we had embraced Microsoft Teams. So once a month, we have our business meeting on Microsoft Teams. Every Thursday, several club members got together for lunch at various restaurants in the area. And we have turned that into, it was called Lunch Bunch. Now we've turned it into Virtual Lunch Bunch, and we hold it on MS Teams. So everybody gets together, they grab their lunches, and we sit and talk and have a good time on that. All of our presentation meetings are now live streamed via YouTube live stream, our YouTube channel for Y-Cars. And we've done that. We've done several to replace like the first Thursday meetings. For the operating night, we replaced those with live streams when we've had programs for that. Our Aries meetings have gone to Microsoft Teams as well. So we've been pushing and embracing the virtual part of the club. And we're also reaching out to community. You mentioned that. We're doing food drives now. This will be our second one for our local food bank called Pilgrims Inn here in Rock Hill. They serve the whole greater York County community. I think they actually reach out in a couple of surrounding counties as well, but they're good folks. And we did our last food drive back in April. We raised $500 in cash, and we managed to collect 1,300 pounds of food. And that was with very little advertising. This time we're out with about a month of time to advertise. And we're trying to get it on the local media, the local news outlets, radio stations, wherever we can get it. The church that we're actually using their parking lot to do it this time. We had a very generous donation of their parking lot from a company called Carolina Fresh Farm here in Rock Hill that hosted the first one. It got a little bigger than we expected it to, so we moved it to a larger parking lot. So Aldersgate Methodist, United Methodist Church here in Rock Hill is providing the parking lot, and they're doing some advertising as well. So we're really excited about it. We're hoping to raise maybe $1,000 and maybe 2,000 pounds of food. You know, with all this COVID unemployment stuff going on, it's very valuable. And as ham radio operators, we can prove not only that we can do ham radio support for organizations and charities and emergency management, but we can provide other support to the community by helping raise, you know, money and food that'll go out and help other people. And you know, it may raise some awareness of ham radio and about our club. So it's got a dual purpose for us.
Oh, that is great, John. Bob, back to you.
Yeah, just great, isn't it? Well, I see some activity here. You have your own Swap Fest and Ham Fest. What's going on there,
yeah,
John?
This was our 68th Ham Fest. This was last year. I was the Ham Fest chairman the last 2 years. We have it at a local church here, and we had some very generous help from folks like DX Engineering, Ham Radio Outlet, Callum McCormick at DX Commander, Steve Deans at Alpha Antenna, and again, Bio Two-Way Radios donating prizes to us and helping us sponsor this event. But we do this. We've had 68 in a row, and unfortunately with COVID, we had to cancel. It was always the first Saturday in October, and unfortunately, we had to cancel. This is very on. This is we just opened the door. So, but the Ham Fest was actually growing, which is unusual for Ham Fest, at least in our area. They seem to be shrinking a little bit. But we had 78 vendor tables sold. Our door gate was about 300 people, which was up about 20% from the year before. We had more tables. Again, we sold to vendors. Wireman out of South Carolina is one of the ones that always comes by two-way radios. I'm trying to think who else was all AC/DC. You know, they're smaller vendors. We can't get the HROs and the DX Engineerings to come for a half-day Ham Fest with 300 people. But they do help us, like DX Engineering and Ham Radio Outlet. And, again, Callum McCormick at DX Commander, they all donated stuff to help us, you know, raise money for the club and to make our Ham Fest a success. So we can't thank them enough.
Well, you got to put Heil Sound's name in there. Let me know, because we love
absolutely
to donate prizes.
Well, thank you for that. We will reach out to you for next year. We're actually thinking about maybe doing two Ham Fests next year, one in the spring at just a parking lot swap meet, and then our 69th Ham Fest in the fall. This is actually the swap meet area. It's early on. Like I said, we just opened up the gates. Unfortunately, I was running the show, so I couldn't take too many pictures, and everybody was busy, so we didn't get a whole lot of pictures from Ham Fest this year. But we have a very nice large parking lot. I think we had 45 or 50 tailgate vendors came in. So not a big Ham Fest, but, you know, enough. And this is our Christmas party last December. I was the MC. We play a game. It's kind of a Chinese auction game that everybody brings a prize, and you can steal the prize three times. So it's a very lively game, and we had such a good time with that. And we also do a ugly Christmas sweater. I won the year before last. I won't show you that picture because it was an ugly sweater. The gentleman there in the corner next to the Christmas tree with the hat on, he actually won. He's wore that costume 3 years in a row trying to win, and he finally won this past year. It's K4BSC. His name's Brent, and really nice guy. He's been in the club for a very long time, an officer for a long time, and served. And this is his first year that he was not an officer. We kind of gave him the ability to retire. Somebody finally stepped in and filled his shoes somewhat well. So he's done a great job for us.
Well, one of the things that I'm getting a recurring message with all of your pictures, and I'm sure Gordo will be on board with me when I say this, that you do more than just have a meeting. There's your Christmas party. You do more. You have fun with it, and that's something the clubs need to think about, because let's face it, some club meetings are boring. And you guys you certainly erased that from the old chart, from what I see. That's great. Hats off to you, John.
Well, thank you. We have to conduct business. So you do have the business part of the meeting, and that's usually, you know, we try to keep that to 45 minutes. Sometimes it runs a little bit longer. We did a complete redo of the club a couple years ago. So our business meetings ran a little bit longer. We, you know, kind of blew everything up and put it back together with new leadership and some fresh ideas. And the club's grown from 38 members in 2018 to, I think, we have 74 now. Wow. So we have a very vibrant and the whole thing about the club, one, you have to be welcoming and you have to be inclusive to everybody. You can't get cliquish or high schoolish. You have to welcome everybody, and you've got to take everybody under the wing, especially new people. Those are going to be the folks that are going to hang out and be the next generation or the legacy of your club. So you have to engage those people early on and help them, mentor them, Elmer them, and get them on the air. Then, you know, you have to engage the community as well, and you have to keep things exciting. So one of the things that drove our club to where it is now was adopting the fun night. Now, we have an advantage. We have a club, you know, radio station there. in a first-class facility where we can go in and bring people in. But that was, you know, something very important that we did, and it put some life into the club. It got everybody excited about coming out to the clubhouse, and we meet once a week, every week, at the clubhouse. We were doing that pre-COVID, so it engaged our membership. The other thing that we started to do before COVID, and it was a pet project of mine, was to reach out to hams in our county that weren't members of the club. So we got a mailing list, an email list, and we were going to do events once a quarter for about 20 hams. We'd invite them from the area, whether they were past members and not members any longer, or had never heard of the club, or had just not members, to invite them to come to an open house during the fun night, provide some snacks and some drinks, and get them to know people in the club, get them to see our facility, and hopefully they would come join us. And even if they didn't join the club but be active with us, maybe they want to contest every once in a while, come out and contest with us. I mean, we run Winter Field Day, Summer Field Day, the South Carolina CUSO party. We run POTA activations as a club. We do several of the ARL contests. We've run several of those. So we've got some young folks, again, that like to contest, and some of the older folks, the CW guys, that want to get in there and contest. Yeah, so we've got a good contest team, too, and we're trying to build on that. And that's part of the activity of engaging people with the club. And that's the name of the game, is engagement.
You have certainly given us just a raft of good ideas, like this one where you take a mailing list of all the hams in the county. Because I every once in a while do that. I put it into QRZ, and you'll see hundreds of hams, and you're going, where are these guys? I never hear them. So what a great idea. Gordo, have you ever heard about that, of clubs doing that?
Oh, yeah. And it's a great way to go.
Well, that's what we got to do. And we appreciate you being here. And, of course, I love this slide. It's got to be the last one, huh?
We had a lot of fun. Pete Kren, who's a lifetime member of the club, he's one of the guys that helped build the facility. He's actually flying the drone on that, and we were repairing the rotor on the tower that day, so we had a couple guys climbing a tower, but that was one of the pictures, and that was a fun afternoon, and the place takes a lot of maintenance, but we've got some club members willing to help out, so it's wonderful to have the facility, and I can't thank you gentlemen enough for having me on tonight and giving us an opportunity to talk about our club, the York County Amateur Radio Society.
Well, we're probably going to have you back again, because you have got some Anytime. Great ideas, and I'm sure Gordo will join me in the fact that we'd love to come and do a virtual meeting. I do a lot of those.
Fantastic.
We'd love to do that. So you stay in touch.
And anybody who has questions that wants to reach out to me directly can reach out to me. My email's good on QRZ. My call is November Juliet for Zulu. I'll be glad to answer emails for people who want ideas for their clubs or how to restructure a club. We're here to help, and we want to grow ham radio. So all we can do is help each other, right?
Very good. John, you haven't seen the last of us. We're going to be calling on you more often. Greetings to all your club members, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for being here with us. I appreciate it.
73 and good night.
Okay. Gordo, where do we go? How do you top that, huh?
Well, all I can say is what a great job all of the club members are doing. Well, on top of that, or to top that, all I can think of is going into space. So Victor is our board man tonight at TWIT, who is soon to be a proud father. Congratulations, Victor. Let's go ahead and head for space. Well, this is the International Space Station, and many of you have worked through it on APRS. Some of you have been lucky enough to actually make a school contact by appointment, or to, just as a rarity as we did many years ago, find them on the air during field day. Well, it took 5 years to get a repeater ready for space work, and it went up on March 6, 2020, on a SpaceX resupply, and aboard was a specially modified Kenwood D710, along with power supply and all the cabling and connectors, of which we helped support some of the connector costs. These are gold-plated connectors. In fact, everything was nearly gold-plated, but the ARISS hardware volunteer teams did 5 years to get it up on the air and get it on the air. So now, with higher power, with a voice repeater, crossband repeater, with more power on APRS, slow scan television capabilities with the VCH1, it is ready to roll, the Columbus module, and they're going to run 25 watts to schools to make sure that they're heard loud and clear. To tune in and hear the space station, your receive frequency is 437-800. 437-800. Your transmit is 145.990 for the instant crossband repeater. But we're going to talk tonight more about the receive side because it's only a week old and everybody is hitting it with all sorts of antennas and powers trying to get through to the International Space Station's repeater. And here we're tuning it in with the ICOM, and that's the 9100. You can look up the space station predictions on the AMSAT online satellite pass production. And by the way, you may have heard something about ARISS and AMSAT. What occurred was last May, the USA team of ARISS, amateur radio aboard the International Space Station, the international group became an incorporated nonprofit entity, officially becoming ARISS.USA. Make that hyphen USA. They can now sign agreements to work at soliciting grants and donations. They'll soon come up with the correct paperwork when approved as a organization that you can donate money to. And it is a great cause, and we encourage all of you to look forward to ARISS. And we thank the AMSAT for allowing us to still continue to help sponsor it through the AMSAT's 501c3 capabilities. We're going to first say, what is it to get the right pass prediction? And they're going to give you pass predictions that give you above 10 degrees shots at receiving. And receiving the International Space Station repeater usually occurs twice a day, sometimes three, and if you're very special, even four times a day. You first click on heavens hyphen above or the AMSAT site. And once you've done that on the Heavens Above, this is my favorite site, that's going to give the position of the International Space Station in many different ways. But you need to do it just right. First above, you want the heavens-above.com site. Once you click on it, it's going to take you to the visible passes. And Heavens Above is a great site. They could always use your donation as well. But you want to be able to get through to that 2-meter 440 repeater aboard the International Space Station. Most important to get through to the International Space Station, you first need to know your location. But you got to log in, because if you don't, they're going to have you somewhere halfway around the world at 0 degrees by 0 degrees. They'll give you the correct time, and your computer will probably give you local time. But you need to log in and give us your location. So you go to log in and you put in either a grid square, or you let your computer go ahead and tell the site where you're located, and bingo. Your name will come up, your latitude and longitude, the time right down to the second. And it's important to remember that on the Heavens Above, when you go to look at the times, they are local to you. They are not universal time. They don't tell you that, but you'll find that out shortly. Once you bring up the satellites, you go to ISS and you click on that. That'll then bring you to the visible only. Don't despair. This is only the early morning before the sun comes up and early evening before the sun has set to darkness. You want all of the passes, not just the visible only passes. So don't panic when you only see 4 or 5 days of space station activity. Get ready. There's going to be a lot more. Click on the all. And once you click on the all passes, you're going to end up with this. Now, the big thing to remember is, number one, it must be on your location where you've logged in. And number two, remember that the times are local time, not UTC, that you might see on the other sites. So be sure and know that. And know that Chris Cassidy, one of the astronauts, KF5KDR, has installed all of the equipment, and it was first lit off exactly 1 week ago. So everyone is trying to make contact on the International Space Station's repeater. And again, you're going up on 145.990, and you may hear yourself on 437.800. But wait a minute. Don't forget this important facto on 145.990. You must encode 67 hertz CTCSS. If you don't encode the CTCSS, you could actually block some of the signals going up. You'll never be heard because you're never going to get passed through the base station. So double check that you are simplex, that you're on 145.990 to transmit, and that you have the subaudible tone of 67 hertz. You're going to be listening on 437.800, and that is FM. Now, as the pass is approaching you, you're going to dial a little higher. You're going to go 437.810 as it's just coming up. Then as it's getting closer to overhead, I wish overhead, you'll be 437.805. When it's overhead, you're 437.800. And then as it's departing due to Doppler shift, now you go down to 437.795. And each pass will last anywhere from about 3 minutes to about 5 minutes. Now, you can see also on the Heavens Above site where the International Space Station is, and it gives you a good idea as to how you're going to get through to it. On this particular pass, for the West Coast, we're going to be using likely beam antennas because it's right at the edge of being 10 degrees above the horizon that you see there. If the pass were right overhead in the central U.S. or the East Coast, right overhead, you're probably going to use an omnidirectional antenna. And we're going to talk more about those antennas as well as handheld antennas. And thanks to Don Arnold, W6GPS, Don is going to be able to give you a quick little audio take of what it takes to easily hear the downlink on 437.8. But make no mistake, for the first week or two or three, it's going to be a job to try and get a signal through the repeater because right now everybody's trying to access it when it's coming either overhead or to the side. And that's going to really occlude a weak signal or a regular signal getting through. I'm happy to report that the Avid satellite users, and thanks to Clint Bradford, his work-sats.com website, Clint, K6LCS, knows what it's like to work all sorts of different satellites. And he indicated probably the first few weeks follow the lead of these expert satellite operators on how quick they make a contact and get off. And they do. They then let other stations with possibly less power be able to make the contact. So it's very important that you know where the pass is. Now, here was a pass a few days ago, and let's see. I'm not sure what happened there, but let's go back to that pass. Pass. Hang on, everybody. There we go. There's Zap Pass. Here's what it sounds like. And this was not a real strong one. As you can see, I'm right at the edge of the above 10 degrees.
And this is Whiskey Bravo 6, November Oscar Alpha Delta Mike 1-3. Who was the 05? Roger, got it, 05. Thank you.
Now, did you hear the slight echo? Well, yeah. You know, 1,000 miles up, 1,000 miles back. Yeah, you will get an echo. So you will hear your own voice live with just a little micro echo when you're successful in getting through. Now, to see where the pass is going to be for the International Space Station repeater, and that repeater, by the way, is on the air all the time, you go to the website that we just gave you, and you can take a look at the sky chart if it's a nighttime pass to get sort of an idea where it is. But I suggest do ground track. And when you do the ground track, now you've got something that looks logical. This tells me it's going to be an overhead pass. So I should have a good chance of accessing it. But what I found out was because it's overhead and there's equal opportunities off to my east, there were so many stations trying that they actually beat me out until I barely got a word in edgewise. So what I recommend is get started by first receiving the International Space Station, and then next week we'll give you some hints on how to do it. Right now, I'm looking for those passes well offshore because it's going to give West Coasters, as well as those of you on the East Coast, when you have an offshore pass, an opportunity to maybe get through without each side drowning out your signal. And also on the website, you can take a look and see where the space station is at any time. And it's just amazing as to how clear you're going to hear it. And let me tell you, the kids are just mesmerized when they listen to it. Now, polarization really does not count. We understand that because the space station, of course, is stable, but linear polarization will work regardless of the rotation angle. And the trade-off is if you're trying to do circular polarization, you're going to lose about 3 dB. But next week, with an aero antenna or some of the other log periodic handheld antennas, you'll be able to rotate through and be able to come up with that space station contact. And the contact is brief. Do know your grid squares, and you'll be able to get through. Now, we encourage all of you to help support it. And Rosalie White, formerly with the American Radio Relay League Educational Department, is now the main lady behind the ARRL support of ARISS. And Rosalie says that you can send donations to ARISS.org/donate, and it will go through the 501c3 AMSAT account until the ARISS USA is officially on board. So we encourage all of you to help support the International Space Station and ham radio aboard. So this is a new opportunity to get us involved with kids, because kids going, you mean I can actually talk through a ham space station? And the answer is yes. And coming up the end of this week and the first part of next week here on the West Coast, we'll have an opportunity of evening passes where, with our handheld, and we'll be talking about using the handheld next week, we'll be able to talk to the International Space Station while actually seeing it at twilight. It only happens for 4 days, but boy, things are exciting. So if you're looking for more than just your local FM repeater, then consider a repeater hundreds of miles away, maybe as much as almost 1,000 miles away on a very weak pass. And who knows, you'll be a aboard the International Space Station playing ham radio. But for right now, don't even think about trying to transmit up unless you got a big, powerful radio like this, but rather listen 437.800. But it's only on for about 6 minutes in the morning and in the afternoons, or 6 minutes at midnight till whatever. But you only have 2 or 3 6-minute passes a day. So enjoy all that the league and ham radio operators are doing to keep ham radio really high flying. So, George, time to work the space station, huh? Go ahead, George.
Well, I tell you, Gordo, you've got me. You've got my attention. I've heard about that last week, and I've really been interested in it. I haven't heard it yet, but I guess I need to listen before I'm going to hear it. I'm going to, though, and I agree with you. Listen first. Don't try to get in right now. Listen to it. You know, a lot of times that's as fun as actually doing the transmitting yourself. I just want to ask you, could you tell me again what that website was where I could go search?
Okay. Heavens-above.com. Heavens, like going to heaven, above.com. Heavens-above.com. And it's usually the first one that comes up, but sometimes it comes up with other heavens above type of stuff. All you want is heavens-above.com. And it's very intuitive that even I could get through it. In fact, there, Victor's got it right up there. Oh, it's over down under. It's over down under. But it's a real easy site to come up with. And again, for your calculations, be sure that you log in, or else you're going to be looking for it in the middle of the African coast, and you'll never hear it at the right time. So double check that you're logged in, George, and let your computer tell the program exactly where you're located.
Thanks, Gordo. That's really interesting stuff. And I'd often thought, you know, why don't they try crossband? Well, apparently they've got around to it now, and this is going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to listening and checking out what's going on there. Well, I was at a transmitter site today, which I frequently do, you know, being a broadcast engineer. And this is one I've spent more time than I want to at recently. But last week I was out there and I put a new tube in it, 4CX15000, which is, you know, that big around, sort of, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood, a ceramic tube. And I tuned it up. While I was there, I heard something go snap, just like that. And that's the sound of, oh, say, around 7,000 volts when it makes an arc, 7,000 volts DC. It's not a buzz like, you know, you might expect with an AC arc. It's just a snap like that. And then the transmitter will overload and, you know, it'll drop the voltage for a moment so that nothing burns up. And I just heard it once, and I really didn't know where it was, and it didn't, you know, only did it once, so I was not real concerned about it, because that will occasionally happen when, you know, you're in and putting in a new tube or something. But I was out there today, and it was time to turn down the filament volts. We've talked about filament volt management before on the ceramic transmitting tubes. We won't go into it tonight, but it was time for me to adjust it down so that I can get the maximum life out of that tube. While I was there, I needed to change out an air pressure interlock that was in there as well. Let me show you this. Maybe, maybe not. Okay, if you look on the right-hand side there, you see those striped wires coming up, going to the little black assembly there. That is a switch. That is a air pressure switch. And you see that big blower down below? That's a three-phase blower. So we move a lot of air through that tube to cool it down. And if you lose air pressure, you're going to cook something, because those tubes can run anywhere from, 120, to almost 200 degrees Fahrenheit. So you really need to keep that air pressure on. And that little switch right there lets me know, or lets the transmitter know, that the blower's up and running. We've got good air pressure going through the tube, so it's okay to operate. All right, that's what I was doing in the rear here. And I noticed something over on the left. You see that thing that looks like a plunger? And it's got two ceramic insulators there. That's a shorting bar. Whenever you take the door off, that bar will pop out. You see it's spring-loaded. And it shorts that plate across the high voltage to ground. And that's what that's about. And there's also a micro switch on the rear of it. You can't really see there. So there's high voltage sitting out there on the ends of those insulators. And when that plunger releases, just shorts it to ground to keep you from killing yourself. Well, if we look down a little bit closer on there, I noticed something kind of funny looking on that bottom insulator. And I'll zoom in here in just a second. I shot this with my phone. Right there, it focused. Wow, what is that on that insulator there on top of it? See those little specks? And you can't really tell it, but there was like a sort of a white film over the top of it. And you can see it on that crimp terminal there. There's something on it, too. Now, I don't know if this insulator got dirty, because, I've seen pretty dirty insulators, and 10,000 volts didn't jump across them, but something did on this one here, so I don't know if some metal shavings got across there, or if it was an insect, or what happened, but something vaporized right there across that insulator. It was no problem cleaning up. I just took a little 409 and a paper towel, and it wiped right off, of course, without any voltage on the transmitter. Wouldn't stick my hand in there otherwise. And it was nice and shiny again, no problems with it. So it didn't do any damage to the insulator, but that's interesting to see when you got, near 7,000 volts jump across a gap that was about this wide. It'll smoke something, and it vaporized whatever that was. Anyway, that's my brief tales from the transmitter tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be doing some more of these in the future. When I'm out there, I'm working, so I can't always hold a camera and shoot everything I'm doing, but I thought that was interesting and maybe give you a good idea why you need to keep those high voltage insulators clean in your amplifier. Well, we'll be back in just a moment, but first, let's get a message from ICOM.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion, as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers and a portable package covering HF, 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo, or just over 2 pounds, with RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. 5-watt battery operation with BP272, or 10 watts with a 13.8 volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions. A large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, and live band scope with waterfall. Integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger, micro USB connector, Bluetooth, and wireless LAN, and there's a micro SD card slot. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRP operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack, with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for soda activations or just a day in the park. The IC705 has now received FCC certification and ICOM expects products to be shipping to dealers by the end of September. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios. And ICOM invites you to enter weekly after each episode of Ham Nation at ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation, and you could win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For September, that new radio is the ICOM IC2738 dual band dual watch mobile. Simultaneous VHF, UHF, VHF, VHF, or UHF, UHF receive. It's got a large high contrast display for easy visibility. Rugged mill standard 810 weather channel receive with weather alert. Optional Bluetooth module is available, and there's free downloadable programming software as well. This is a great analog dual band radio. What can I say? It's easy to operate and easy to see that display as well. And it's an ICOM on top of that. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode and register to win. Sign up. Good luck. And don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And I've got another radio we're going to be giving away. It is the ICOM IC705 that we saw a moment ago and you've been hearing a lot about lately. You know, that's a new hybrid radio. It's base station performance and functions and a compact, lightweight, portable package. A great QRP rig, perfect for SOTA, POTA, or, you know, any on-the-air location. It's got 10 watts with the battery pack, with external 13.8 volts, or 5 watts with the battery pack, the same one I use on my IC51 handy talkie. So, just a different class for a QRP rig. I'll just put it that way. And those will be shipping to dealers at the end of this month. So, you want to get in on that. You can do your pre-ordering now. They'll be delivering, I believe, in October. But if you want to win one, and why wouldn't you? We'll be celebrating the 15th anniversary of Amateur Logic coming up in October, and we've got another contest. ICOM is a proud sponsor of this as well as MFJ and Heil Sound. We'll be giving away the IC705 transceiver package. We've also got the utility backpack to go along with it. You've seen it before. A great backpack, perfect for storing the radio. We've got an MFJ big ear antenna as well, the complete package with the tripod and the carry bag. That's a great performer there and folds down very compact. We've also got the coax to go with that, RG8X from MFJ, and the MFJ 4115 portable 12-volt power supply, really small compact 12-volt supply that'll fit right in your backpack. As well, you might want, a headset to go with this, and there's none better for this purpose than the Heil Sound BM17 headset. You know, this is a headset that was really made for emergency communications usage for that bright color there, but it's lightweight and compact, really perfect for any on-the-go setup. So you'll enjoy that as well. And we've got a set of books here from Gordo's friend, Forrest Mims. We've got Getting Started in Electronics, which will be the latest edition. And we've got the whole series of Forrest Mims mini notebooks. You know, you used to see these for sale at Radio Shack. We've got the complete set here. We'll be thrown in as well. So how do you win that? Well, you can get the details by going to amateurlogic.tv/contest. We've got all the details there. We want to thank ICOM, MFJ, Heil Sound, and W5YI Master Publishing for providing all that.
And by the way, we'll be shooting an episode Friday night. So join us live at amateurlogic.tv if you'd like to get in on that. It's the last show before the drawing comes up in October. And now Bob, I believe, has a little smoke and solder from his workbench tonight.
Hello? I'm looking at something. You know, we've been talking about the final for the pine board. I have the final finish, but I have trouble with the input circuitry, so I go back to my great electric radio. If you guys don't get this, you should. It's really a great little magazine every month, been going on for decades. But you want to find places to refer to and get people's idea, this is a place to do it. But I just answered my one situation, and I think I can make that happen. Anyway, thanks for letting me barge in here on the smoke and solder thing, but it kind of goes along with what you found, George. It's all about insulators. I have had so much trouble with my wonderful 75A4, that guy. It's just a standard receiver in the industry, built in 1955, and that one is a 99.99%. It's a gorgeous piece that I got from an estate. I loved it, but the thing, every time here in the past few years, every time I turn it on, it didn't come on, but everything was good until I saw one time the filaments weren't lit. And I'm going, wait a minute, the filament of the rectifier. So I started messing around, and every time I'd move it, it worked. So, okay, you know, if it isn't broke, don't worry about it, okay? But when I made the move from Pleasant Hope, I had things kind of out of position. I said, let me find out. I hate to take it out of the cage, you know, I scratch something and all that. I opened it up, and let me show you what I found. Understand, every time I'd move that rectifier, it'd work, and it would work all day, all night. But when I turned it off, had to do that again. Well, here is the problem. I'm telling you, it was so simple. You see, the filament leads, the transformers in those days, they actually had the lead was rubber and the copper line, but it had a cloth outer covering, and you can just see a piece of it there. That cloth had caught on, I guess it caught on fire at some time. The thing is, there's a lot of current going on there. And so when you have a situation with current and heat, bingo. And I found it. But the thing is, it still was making contact when I would move it. And the contact was really part of that carbon arc and that burn spot is what I assess it from. And it was crazy that, of course, I cut that burn part out, soldered, did a nice solder job back to it, and bingo, we're back on the air. Because I would never lost any time with it because it would always work after I would move the tube. And of course, what happens there is that we have a situation of heat and current. And right there, I made it not happen. So my wonderful 75A4 is back in business 100% along with all that. That's my morning rig. I got three or four ways I can go there, but the delightful ICO transmitter and the Mosley receiver or the National or the, and you switch them around. But anyway, that's my funny little story in it. Just wanted to let you guys know that sometimes there's some craziness going on with all this stuff, and it's just kind of fun to fix it. That's for sure. talk about fixing things. Here's a guy that can fix the news for you and space and everything else. Don, how are you doing, buddy? Don Wilbanks.
Hey, we're good. Let me tell you something. It was really cool to hear Gordo talk about the satellite stuff and the ISS and the new crossband repeater. We've got a story on Newsline about that tonight. In fact, we've got pictures of that radio coming up. And I just happened to look at the satellite prediction software on my iPhone. And I have an ISS pass coming up at 11:01 Central tonight. And it's at 44 degrees elevation. So that's not too bad. And then 11 minutes later, AO92 is coming over at 49 degrees. So I think here in a couple of hours, I'm going to be standing out in the yard with the elk antenna and try to make some ISS and satellite contacts. So I'm looking forward to that. I haven't made any satellite contacts in a few weeks, and I was actually kind of starting to get some withdrawals. I was sitting pretty hard and heavy there for a while. So maybe I can make some satellite contacts tonight. And why don't we go ahead and check out some pictures of that station on the ISS in tonight's report from Amateur Radio Newsline.
From Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2236, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. We begin this week's report with good news being delivered from some 250 miles above the Earth. Stephen Kinford, NHWB, has the details.
The first element of the interoperable radio system has been set up and installed on the International Space Station for use in the ARISS contacts, replacing the old Ericsson radio system and packet module first certified for amateur radio use in July of 2000. The new system began its operations on Wednesday, September 2nd in FM crossband repeater mode with an uplink frequency of 145.99 megahertz and an access tone of 67 hertz. The downlink frequency is 437.800 megahertz. It's been a bit of a wait for this next generation system, which was years in the making. In March, it rode the SpaceX CRS-20 resupply mission to the ISS from Kennedy Space Center. Its creation was the culmination of 5 years of work by the ARISS volunteer hardware team. With its higher power radio APRS capabilities, voice repeater, and slow scan TV system, it is expected to have a profound impact for hams, students, and even members of the public watching future ARISS events.
With a major hurricane over, hams in Louisiana turn their attention to other important work, namely an insidious, unseen killer.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Laura, hams were mobilized in and around Lake Charles, Louisiana, and other devastated areas in the region to assist with public safety measures, especially concerning portable generator use. Community emergency response team members in Denham Springs were asked by the state fire marshal's office to help educate residents in the proper use of generators being employed due to persistent widespread power outages. Hams from the Ascension Amateur Radio Club in Gonzales, Louisiana, were also encouraged to help with the volunteer effort. The focus on generator safety was not insignificant. Although the storm was called one of the most powerful to sweep through the Gulf of Mexico, news reports noted that following the hurricane, more deaths were reported due to carbon monoxide poisoning than to the actual storm itself. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9-GCO.
With COVID-19 still in the picture, Ham Radio University's planners are said to be rethinking their strategy for the big annual Day of Radio Education in January.
Organizers of the popular Ham Radio University, held for more than two decades on Long Island, New York, are considering the likelihood of hosting it in January as a virtual conference instead. Founded by N2MUN, who became a silent key this past March, Ham Radio University is a day of workshops, learning, and fellowship. Its website notes that it is presently scheduled to take place on January 9, 2021, on the campus of Long Island University in Brookville, New York. A message from ARRL Hudson Division quotes Richie K2KNB of the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club as saying the HRU committee is leaning toward a virtual event. More details are expected from the organizing committee. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jack Parker, W8ISH.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Stephen Kinford, N8WB, Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Jack Parker, W8ISH,
Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's a solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
Space weather this week continues to be a bit on the quiet side, at least as far as Earth view is concerned. But actually, we've had quite a few solar storm launches, but you have to look to find them. As we switch to our front side sun, you can see a region in the south. Now, back on the 5th, this region fired a little mini solar storm, and it launched a solar storm to the east of us. So it didn't go Earth-directed, but it was still a pretty view. And then, not even a day later, we don't see it on Earth view, but if we look in coronagraphs, we had a massive solar storm launch, probably the biggest we've seen yet. And I'll bet you this was that filament that we were watching rotate across the Earth-facing disk just last week. Well, it looks like it might have let go, but it was on the sun's far side, so we didn't get a view, but we do see it in coronagraphs, and it's just stunning. So we will know in about 2 weeks when that region rotates back into view at Earth whether or not that filament did erupt. Meanwhile, we have yet another region that's kind of beginning to come out in the south. This is a different one than we saw before, and it's just beginning to emerge. It's still pretty quiet, but it could be boosting the solar flux for amateur radio operators and emergency responders and could keep us in the marginal range for radio propagation over the next couple days. So what else does our sun have in store for us this week? Well, this is Stereo A. It's our partially farsighted monitor. You can see here's Earth, here's the sun, and here's Stereo A staring at the sun pretty much from the side. And as you take a look at Stereo's view, you can see that region down in the south going pop, pop, pop. That was that weak region that fired off that Earth-directed solar storm that went east of Earth. Since then, it kind of fizzled out. And then you started seeing yet another region grow in a finger-like coronal hole in the south. Now, that region is growing rapidly, but we'll see whether or not it boosts that solar flux very much or whether it becomes flare-active. We're not expecting all that much from it right now. And then if you look past that region, well, the sun is pretty quiet and you don't see a lot more activity going on. So outside of maybe a little bit of fast wind that we should be seeing in about a week or so, it looks like we might have easily another week or more of quiet. For more details on this week's space weather, including when and where you might see aurora and how that bright region might affect amateur radio propagation, come check out my channel or see me at spaceweatherwoman.com.
And also be sure to follow her on Twitter right there, at Tamitha Scove, and you can check out pretty much all of her videos on YouTube. Just search for Tamitha Scove and you'll find everything you need to find out about that. So, yeah, I think I'm going to go out in the yard with the satellite antenna and see if I can make a ISS and maybe an AO92 contact here in a little less than 2 hours and see what's going on. Amanda, have you ever tried doing the satellite stuff? It's really cool. It's kind of addicting.
You know, we have worked a few satellites, and it is really fun. It's kind of stressful, though, at the same time. But
yeah,
once you get in a groove and you feel comfortable, not so bad. But it's kind of overwhelming at first because you're not really sure if someone's coming back to you because they're really quick. They're just like, DDN, go. And you're like, what? Was that me? Are they calling me? I'm not sure.
It's kind of an adrenaline rush, isn't it? Kind of an adrenaline rush. Big time adrenaline rush.
It actually is. Okay. Follow a lot of your satellite workers on Twitter. That's my best advice. First of all, they're going to tell you which ones are coming up. And second, they're kind of going to call out some people for doing inappropriate or lid kind of activities on Twitter. And you're going to learn a lot just following them about what to do and what not to do. Also, watch a lot of YouTube videos. I think that's my best advice. Okay. I got some questions. Gordo, first questions for you since I heard your beautiful voice in the background there. Somebody wanted to verify N4DLW. He says 145.825 up and 437.55 down for the ISS repeater. Is that correct?
145.990 up with a tone of 67 hertz, 145.990. Now, you might want to go 905 or 895, and the receive is 437.800. But 145.990 is center for that satellite or for the space station.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Gordo. And this is kind of funny. The chat room went crazy when John was showing off their ambulance and things. So I just have to kind of share, for those that just listen as a podcast, you have no idea what the chat room says. This is pretty interesting. A lot of people are coming up with names for the ambulance. Someone says, I think I need a bambulance. N4ACB says, do they need a balambence for the antenna? Joe, KC8RLU says, if it lands in the ocean, is it a clambulance? I came up with a few of my own. I did. So if you get in it and you bang your knee against the seat getting into it, is it now a whambulance? And if you get a flat tire going down the road, is it now a dambulance?
So. I saw it, and what it was, if you – there was one – oh, yeah, if the air goes out of your tire, is it a flatulence?
Oh, my gosh. I wasn't going to say that one.
I will. And, I have no
and then
filter.
There's just the good old, it's a hambulance. So thank you, John, for being on tonight, by the way. That was great. Oh, and one more. Spambulance if it's lunchtime. Okay. Moving on.
Yes.
We have some special events coming up, and we all talked about one last week. We've got Route 66 coming up starting, I believe, this weekend, and the Blue Ridge Bonanza special event. Check out W4CA.com for the date on that. They did not give me a date on that. Let's see what else I want to talk about. I worked at the Colorado CUSO party this last weekend. It was absolutely fantastic. Bands were good, and I met a lot of people out there that already knew who I was and had been watching Ham Nation, so that was a really fun time. Also, it's now winter time here in Colorado, if no one noticed. We got 5 inches of snow, and it is currently 38 degrees outside, and it froze overnight. I can't believe it.
Hey, Amanda.
Yes.
Don't forget about W7Y. If you don't have Wyoming in your log, that special event is going on until the 15th. And I got them on the first day. So I've got W7Y in the log now. Don't forget that. Check that out on QRZ, W7Y.
Great. Yay. I didn't know it was still going. I worked them this weekend, so I thought it ended this weekend. My apologies.
Until the 15th.
Tom Ritter in the group. You guys are doing an awesome job running that. Let's see. Oh. I just want to commemorate 9/11. So we always talk about it, and we always remember, and we're never going to forget here on Ham Nation. So for everyone out there that had any relation to or felt that day or remembers it, we're here. So all right. Nets, we have 14,268 for the 20-meter net and 7,190 for the 40-meter net. We've got D-Star on 14, Charlie, and DMR is on 31012. That's all I've got. Bob, so
Amanda,
nice to have you on tonight. Yes, sir. Go
ahead. Amanda, I have something for you, Amanda. That's your backyard, everybody. Tell us a story, Amanda.
Well, first of all, that's my backyard. I live on a half an acre, and my beautiful puppies that you guys see all the time, Delta and Radio. But I think the biggest thing in this picture is the picket fence flag that I made by hand. So my dad made it, put up a new fence. Actually, I helped him put it up. So I took all of his old pickets and I put them together, sawed them down, measured, did the correct measurements for the flag, and painted it all out and laid out the stars. And That's my creation. That was a good project, and it's beautiful.
Good,
it sticks out like
you.
A sore thumb, which is exactly what I wanted. So we mounted it on our picket fence, and everyone that drives by gets to see it.
Great work.
I thought we should admonish you for doing that, especially on this very special time of thinking about 9/11. And it's a crazy time. I know exactly the spot in the house I was standing when Sarah yelled at me and said, "You got to come here." And we watched all that stuff going on, standing up in the kitchen. We were just mesmerized. But yes, don't forget the weekend. There's a lot going on. I remember this is W6R in Springfield that I helped put on the map here a few years back when I was there, but they're all there, man. And it's to me, the funnest? Is that a good word, Gordo? Gordo, is that a good word, funnest? Is that a word?
Yeah, I think it's a great word, funnest. Yeah, I'm for it, Bob.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's the funnest event because it runs a whole week, and it's just fun. So you want to get in there and see if you can contact every station up and down. Just look up the Route 66. They have a really nice website. You can check it out. Well, it's been a great night. I learned a lot. Gordo, you spent a lot of time putting that together, though. Thanks very much. So, Don, take care. Amanda, take care. Victor, you be sure and take care or none of this happens. So thank you very much. Hope all your family and everybody in your sight is healthy. And we'll see you back here next week right here on You Got It, Ham Nation. So good night, everybody. See ya.
Have a funnest time this weekend working the International Space Station and Route 66 W7Y. You're going to have loads of fun.
Want more TWiT? Well, check out Smart Tech Today. It's at twit.tv/STT. It's the show where Matthew Casinelli and I cover everything there is to know about smart tech. It's automation. It's connected devices. It's smart home. It's all those goodies and so much more. We get the news. We get the latest devices. We do reviews. Everything. You got to check it out. twit.tv/STT for Smart Tech Today.